All right, well, we are in a sermon series called At the Movies, where we're taking a look at some spiritual themes in some popular movies from our day. And so, this morning we're going to get to Inside Out in just a moment. But before we do, I want to draw your attention to inside your programs, inside your connection cards, is a called a parent cue. And for those of you parents of kids who are enjoying their time with Aaron downstairs right now, this is a way to interact with a curriculum that we have here at Westside, and it's a way for you parents to just kind of reinforce the things that they're learning at home, because, of course, 99% of the time they're at home with you. When it comes to discipleship of our kids, we really want to help arm you as parents with the resources that you need to really make an impact in your kids' lives. And so there's the memory verse. The key theme this month is all about the search for wisdom. So there's a lot of Proverbs, and there's a lot of great things found within these lessons that the kids are going through. And so we outline each week for you and what we're doing, as long as the memory verse and the main points. And then one of the things I want to point out to you and how you can use this card is there's some strategic things that you can do with our curriculum. One of the things that they reinforce is this idea that there are strategic times throughout the day where you can really speak life into your kids. There's the morning time when they're getting up, right? They're getting prepped for their day. There's drive time, where we all have this drive time where we're spending time with our kids. And that really these days seems to be one of the primary times where we can actually stop and smell the roses a little bit, have conversations. Meal time, something that's, of course, becoming extinct in our day and age. And so what intentional questions can you bring up during that meal time? And then bedtime, of course, as they're going to bed and we're tucking them in and all of that good stuff. And so there's some strategic ways to interact with your kids during those times. And I think you'll find this very helpful. So that's how you use this parent cue. I would encourage you, highly encourage you, to grab one of these, take it home. They come out the first of every month. They cover all the new things that we're going through with our kids. So check this out. The Hunt is the name of the curriculum. So that's what our kids are going through right now downstairs. And ironically, we're going to look at a kids' movie this morning to learn some things as adults. And so the movie this week is Inside Out, as Kyle mentioned. And it's this great movie, really one of my favorite Pixar movies of all time. And I'm going to show you the trailer just to give you an inside look at Inside Out. Yeah, Inside Out. So our feature presentation this morning, it belongs, or it begins in the head of this little girl named Riley. And she's going through this really difficult transition. She's moving from a town that she grew up in, a town that she loves, in Minnesota, where she was an ice hockey player and she had lots of friends, and she's transitioning into a neighborhood in the big city in San Francisco because her dad has been transitioned in his work. And she's now living in a row house in an unfamiliar place, and she's really, really frustrated with this entire experience. And so on top of that, her mom comes to her and explains to her that she needs to put on a happy face. She says, we need you to be our happy little girl. And we together need to keep smiling in order to help your dad go through this transition. And it's in this one explanation that her mom gives to her little girl in which this little girl begins stuffing her emotions. And she begins putting on that smiling face and just keeping up with things that her parents wanted her to be, in order to make everything okay, in order to make them happy with her, in order to be accepted. And so all these problems, of course, begin getting stuffed down deep inside of her, all these emotions that she's going through. And of course, what happens is she begins to misbehave. Her behavior becomes erratic and chaotic and confusing for her parents. And of course, it's all because she hasn't learned to communicate the real emotions that are going on inside of her head. And I think personally, I love this film because, and it probably many of us have can relate with this, but I went through a move just like this at the tender age of 10. When I was 10 years old, in fact, it was almost eerily familiar because when I was 10 years old, I moved from the icy, snowy Anchorage, Alaska, down to Everett, Washington with my family. And I remember for the first year of that transition, being so incredibly angry with my parents. I was having evenings in which I would be up all night crying to my mom, and she was, of course, in agony over this whole experience because I was expressing my frustration at losing all my friends. I couldn't make any new friends. I hated Washington. I hated all the rain. I hated that it rained and didn't snow. Like, what's the point of cold if you can't play in the snow? You know, I just hated the whole experience, and I was just complaining and complaining and complaining. And at one point, I told my parents, if I can't go back home, I'm just going to run away. Right? And I had all those emotions. I was trying to navigate them and figure things out. And so, you know, for me, this film, I think it just touched on something that I had really gone through. And I remember that as a kid. But we have a tendency, even as adults, and maybe you could say especially as adults, because we don't have permission to act out emotionally over things. But we have a tendency to stuff things. We have a tendency to stuff our emotions. We have a tendency to kind of to glance over the deep, the raw emotions of fear, of anger, of sadness, of disgust, in order to just kind of experience the happy things in life, the joyful things in life. And whether it's past disappointments or trauma or our current state of stress and anxiety that are going on in our emotions, we tend to kind of leave those things behind or leave those things unattended while we kind of put on our face to the rest of the world. And it's in this world of social media, it's the phenomena of posting your best and leaving the rest, right? And we always want to put on that perfect face, and we always want to keep up perceptions and keep up with the Joneses. And the problem, of course, is that when we don't take the time to adequately face the negative emotions that we are going through, these feelings, these emotions lurk around in the dark, right? And they begin to fester, right? And we begin to feel the full weight of these things as they kind of mass together and become a real, real problem. And things begin to be a mess inside. We begin to act out. We begin to feel all sorts of deep, difficult things that we don't want to feel. And they tend to come out of us in the most inopportune times, right? In erratic situations and situations in which we can't control them. And so, you know, we try to keep it locked all inside, but they just never stay locked up inside. I would liken it to, we just recently took a day trip on Friday, went and floated the Snoqualmie River, and went to dinner afterwards with our kids. We were looking at the clock, and we were recognizing it's been 8 hours since our dog has been outside. Right. And so you go home, and as you're walking up to the door, you're like, I don't know what I'm going to see inside there. You know, is it going to stink? Is it going to be a mess? Is it what? And of course, the dog is like bottled up for 8 hours. You open the door, she jumps on you, and she's running around in circles, and she's been so cooped up and bottled up that she springs to action. And that's oftentimes what happens to our emotions. We keep them bottled up, we keep them buried inside, and they just explode out in all sorts of crazy and exciting ways. Guys, especially, are notorious for stuffing emotions, just to speak to all of you guys in this room. We don't tend to be overly expressive emotionally. I know some guys who are very expressive emotionally, but in general, guys tend to stuff their emotions. They tend to have a difficult time embracing their emotions. But the truth is, all emotions are necessary. God has created our emotional selves for a very specific purpose. He's created our emotions. They're a gift to us. Our emotions help us to navigate our relationships with one another. Our emotions help us to navigate our relationship with God. As we express these things, as we explore the depth of our emotions, we become more emotionally healthy human beings. And so we want to learn to grapple with them, and we want to learn to embrace our emotions as a gift. I want to take you to a passage of scripture in John chapter 16. And in John 16, Jesus is nearing the end of his life. He's about to go to the cross. He's about to experience the crucifixion. And he's taking these moments, these very serious and I would say intentional moments with his disciples before his death to give them his last minute instructions. And he teaches them about emotions. He instructs them about the emotions that they're about to go through. And he essentially is saying, you have to go through these things. You have to experience them. Allow yourself to go there in order to bring about the gift that God ultimately wants to give each and every one of you. And the disciples are in this very confusing place. They can sense that something is wrong, you know, but they're kind of like Riley. They're on this move from Minnesota to San Francisco, and they don't quite know how to navigate what they are feeling. They're like, what are you saying? Why are you saying this? That you're going to leave and you're going to go away? We don't get this. And so Jesus is trying to instruct them gently. And we find some very instructive and very illuminating words from Jesus. John chapter 16, he says, very truly I tell you, you will weep and mourn while the world rejoices. You will grieve, but your grief will turn to joy. A woman giving birth to a child has pain because her time has come. But when her baby is born, she forgets the anguish because of her joy that a child is born into the world. And so with you. Now is your time of grief. But I will see you again, and you will rejoice, and no one will take away your joy. So isn't it interesting in these final moments, these final instructions where Jesus is speaking to his disciples, that he wants to instruct them on their emotions. Here is how you can navigate your emotions. And he says, he uses this metaphor, and it's very apt for anybody who's gone through the childbearing experience. I remember when our first child was born, how stressful that was and anxious. And we were going through these periods of time where, you know, I'm thinking to myself, is my wife dying? You know, what's going on here? And of course, the baby comes out and there's this release of joy. There's these water is coming down my face. And I'm like, well, where did that come from? And there's all these incredible emotions that happen. But ultimately, you know, when you bring a child into the world, it ends in this incredible joy, right? It's amazing, wonderful, mystifying experience. And so Jesus uses that to illustrate oftentimes what the cycle of life is like. We go through pain. We go through sadness. We go through anger and disgust and all these emotions. But ultimately, God is trying to redeem those experiences and bring us to a full experience of joy as we move through all of those emotional things that we must experience along the way. So Jesus is saying, hey, there's this natural journey of emotional health that we all must take. But it begins when we stop denying our emotions. And that's my first point this morning, that we have to stop denying our emotions. In the movie, the lead character is Joy, of course, and she is represented by the color yellow. And everyone looks to Joy to provide leadership when something is wrong with Riley's operating system, so to speak. When Riley begins to misbehave, when things she's feeling are not the happy, joyful self, you know, everybody looks to Joy to kind of bring her back to her normal state of being. And so when Riley is expressing joy, she's well received. But when she is expressing sadness, when she's misbehaving, of course, all is not right in the world and things are at odds with her parents and life is very difficult, right? And the team is trying to navigate, how can we fix this? How can we work this out? And they're working together on that. But Joy is the lead. She's the one they're all looking to. And there's one scene where sadness, I think it was shown in this preview, where sadness is touching one of the core memories and it starts turning blue and all of a sudden things get really dark in the room and everybody's like, what are you doing? You know, sadness, you can't touch the core memories. You're going to ruin this whole joyful experience. And it's this moment where you kind of recognize, you know, the naivety of this young girl, right? In her mind, she doesn't understand this emotion of sadness. And so she's scared of it. And she's unsure of what it will do to her, what it will produce. And of course, they're trying to just keep things happy and they're keep things joyful and keep things yellow, right? In the world of Riley's brain. And so what you find, of course, is that not everything can just be fixed and colored with joy. Now, what they find along the journey is that they need to move and work through the emotions of sadness and anger and fear and disgust. They all need to work together in order for her to be an emotionally happy and emotionally complete human being. And so, again, we have this human tendency. We all want to be happy. We want to pursue it at all costs. But the truth of the matter is that to always be happy in this life is impossible. You know, if we've been fed that lie, it just is a lie, right? We shouldn't embrace it. We should never accept it. We will not always be happy, right? We will not always experience joy, right? We will go through the full gamut of emotions, and we have to learn to accept that and to embrace it and to walk through it. Just as an example of this idea of stuffing our emotions or denying our emotions, I want you to turn to somebody next to you, okay? If you have somebody next to you, and ask them and look into their eyes and ask them, how are you feeling? Just go ahead right now. How are you feeling? All right, so I'm gonna stop you right there, because we don't want to get too deep into this whole process, but because actually Westside is full of a bunch of emotionally healthy people, right? So this illustration will probably sit flat, because what I was gonna say is that typically when you ask a person in church, "How are you doing?" what is their response? "I'm fine," right? Or this morning, as you asked the person, they were probably like, "I'm really uncomfortable right now. Thank you, Pastor Jeremiah. Really uncomfortable." But, you know, typically, you know, we just put on that face. "Well, I'm fine," right? Because we just want to maintain the status quo. We don't want to ruffle any feathers by unearthing the things that we're really feeling. Probably not too many people responded to your question this morning saying, "Oh, I'm so brutally sad or tired or angry or disgusted or whatever else that it might be." Maybe a few of you honest people actually responded that way, but we don't typically do that. We kind of want to maintain that status quo. And so, you know, it's just a society thing. It's a human thing. It's a human experience, really. It's hard. It's hard to navigate our emotions. It's uncomfortable. And so we just want to glance over them. We kind of stuff them to the side. And man, if we don't learn to embrace the emotional beings that God has created us to be, we will really deny ourselves really the best of who God has created us to be. And so, and we don't want to deny our emotions. We want to learn to experience the full range of emotion that God has created in us. You know, one of the things that I was recognizing really quickly is how Jesus, who's fully God and fully man, throughout the scriptures is constantly presented to us as the complete human being. And as the complete human being, we are all called as Christians to be disciples of Jesus Christ. That's what Christian means, to be a little Christ, to be like Christ. And if we are to be like Christ, we are to study his life and look at who he was and look at how he lived and emulate him as best as we can. And what we recognize in Jesus from any reading of the scriptures, you'll find that he was fully present with his emotions. And we have to learn to be present to all of our emotions. Mark chapter 3 speaks of Jesus as he was arguing with the Pharisees, and they're arguing with him over certain things that they feel as though he is doing wrong. And Jesus, it says, gets angry with them. He's angry. He's frustrated. He lashes out sometimes and lets them know it, right? Jesus experiences the emotion of anger, something in which I think a lot of us would say, "Really? Like Jesus got angry?" Now, you should read some of these scriptures. They're really amazing. Mark chapter 8 describes a moment in which Jesus was disgusted with these same Pharisees, because he had just fed 4,000 people, this incredible miracle from one person's lunch. And the Pharisees come to him and they say, "Hey, if you're going to do this kind of stuff, you have to show us a sign, You know, in order to prove that you really are the Son of God, as you say that you are. And he's like, what did I just do? Right? He's totally disgusted with their need for a sign on top of a sign on top of a sign on top of a sign, right? And it's disgust that Jesus is going through. Maybe a little anger in there as well. John chapter 11 is the shortest memory verse. I went to private school growing up, private Christian school. And the last day of the year, they would always give us this verse as a memory verse. It's John chapter 11, verse 23. It's Jesus wept, right? Shortest verse in your Bible. So it was a gift to us on the last day of school. But Jesus is with his good friend Lazarus, or his good friend Lazarus is no longer with him. He's died, and he's with his sisters. And he's there in that moment. He's about to bring Lazarus back to life, but he's embracing the grief of the moment. And it says that Jesus wept. And not just tears, because when it describes him weeping, it's describing an experience that was very common in first century Palestine, where he wept. It was an ugly cry. It was like, you know, wiping the tears from his eyes, uncontrollable emotion that Jesus had in that moment. Luke chapter 22 describes a similar experience where Jesus is in the Garden of Gethsemane. He's full of anxiety. He's fearful, and he's concerned about what he is about to go through on the cross. And it says he's in such a state of anxiety that he's sweating drops of blood, intense stress and anxiety that he is going through. Those of you who experience anxiety, who experience fear, just recognize Jesus has walked in your shoes. He knows how you feel. In Luke chapter 10, Jesus sends out his disciples, and they return to him telling these amazing stories of these miracles that God did through them, these amazing experiences that they had as he sent them out and instructed them to do these things. And it says that Jesus is filled with joy, right? He's so proud. He's in this moment where they're experiencing what he has experienced, this incredible relationship with the Father, and it fills him with joy. Right here we find Jesus experiencing the full range of emotions, these gifts that God has given us, and he welcomes them. He embraces them. He lives into them. And when we deny our emotions, what we are saying is, well, God, I've got this. I've got things taken care of. I'm under control. And when we deny our emotions, we're denying a fundamental part of who we are, dependent upon God. When we deny our emotions, we're denying our dependence on God. Because oftentimes our emotions are those moments where we cry out to God and we say, God, things are out of control in my world. I need you. I don't know how to navigate these things that I'm feeling. This is overwhelming. This is confusing. This is disorienting to me. God, would you speak? God, would you heal? God, would you bring peace in the midst of the chaos of my life and what I am going through? Often, our emotions are those gateways through which we come to God. And we have to learn to embrace them and live in those moments and be dependent upon our God who has created us with these emotions. And so we're going to stop denying our emotions, and we're going to be present in our emotions. How do we do this? Peter Scazzario, he's a pastor and he's an author. And he writes The Emotionally Healthy Leader, The Emotionally Healthy Church, you know, all these books about emotional health. And he says this. He says, emotional health and spiritual maturity are inseparable. Let me just say that again because I don't have it up on the screen. Emotional health and spiritual maturity are inseparable. It's so true. Being an emotionally healthy person is being a spiritual mature person. The two go hand in hand. We can't grow in our relationship with Jesus if we are stuck in emotional childhood. It's required for us to grow spiritually, to be emotionally whole, to be emotionally healthy. So how can we face our emotions in a healthy way? What are some ways that we can go through this process? And what are some ways that, you know, those things that we do stuff to the side during the course of our day, because sometimes that's just, you know, we have to, you know, we're at work or we're in public places and it's not acceptable for us to be just, you know, fully flying off the handle emotionally. And so we have to learn to set things aside to return to them later, right? But How do we do that? How do we face our emotions in a healthy way? Let me suggest a few things to you that I've done personally and things that I know work from my experience in counseling and working with other people. You know, one of the things that's so, so helpful is journaling. I don't know how many of you practice the discipline of journaling, but if you don't and you are challenged by this particular sermon this morning, I want to encourage you to begin the practice of journaling, just writing down things that you're going through, things that you are feeling. It's so helpful, and one of the things that's so helpful to me when I journal is just being able to stop and think about how I'm feeling and to be able to describe certain events and things that have happened to me during the course of a day and be able to say, man, that made me feel this way or that made me feel that way, and to be able to articulate what it is that I'm going through. Because I think oftentimes, you know, like a child who can't communicate the things they are feeling, you know, they begin acting out. And for me, when I cannot articulate the emotions that I'm going through, I begin to get impatient, angry, bitter, resentful, difficult to be around, you know, all the kind of things that you don't want to materialize in your life. You know, those are the kind of things that, like, I begin to act out on. And so it's so critical and so important that we articulate the way that we are feeling, and journaling can be so helpful to do that. You know, another way to do just this is to share our experiences with others. You know, speak to a friend about it. Share with somebody close to you, a spouse, a parent. You know, talk about the things that you are going through. It's amazing how often when we share our experiences and our emotions that we'll hear in response to that something along the lines of, hey, I've gone through that too. I feel that too. Sometimes I think we feel like we're just in our own heads, you know, that we're a stranger to the rest of the world. But so oftentimes I think that's the power of this particular movie, is we're watching this girl go through these emotions. We're saying, I've been there too. I felt that too. I know exactly what that's like. And we think we're a stranger in our own heads, in our own worlds. But the truth of the matter is, we all have these thoughts. We all have these experiences. We all battle with these emotions. I love how the psalmist David oftentimes would write a song. He would play music in order to deal with his emotions. And of course, he had the gift of being a songwriter and being able to play and being able to play an instrument. It's something actually that I love to do. I love to pick up my guitar and just play and just sing. And of course, I'm able to do that, which is nice. For those of you, maybe you aren't musically inclined, play some music. Yeah, put on some music and just see if that doesn't help to bring you to a certain place emotionally. In Psalm chapter 42, verse 5, this is one of the strategies that David would employ. He wrote this. He said, "Why, my soul, are you so downcast?" And he's speaking to himself here. He's trying to articulate and unearth what he is feeling, what he is going through. "Why are you so disturbed within me? Put your hope in God, for I will yet praise him, my Savior and my God." And the interesting thing about this particular passage is that throughout the course of the Psalms, you know, before this and after this, this is a continuous refrain. David is describing and articulating all these terrible things that are happening to him. And then finally he'll come in with this, and it's like a chorus in a long song where he's just coming back to this. "Why, my soul, are you so downcast?" He's questioning himself. He's trying to articulate, you know, what are you going through? What are you feeling? What are you experiencing? Don't you know your hope is in God? He's trying to return himself again to a place of hope, a place of faith, and a place of trust in his God. And so music can oftentimes unearth those emotions. It can help us to navigate them as we feel strongly during times of just hearing and listening to music. Here's another suggestion. When you're emotionally exhausted, when you're emotionally weary, you know, it's funny because when we are physically tired, we have to rest. When we are emotionally tired, our tendency is to say, "Oh, I must need rest." But we'll rest and we'll wake up and we're still as weary, right? And so one of the things that can really help when it comes to emotional fatigue is to actually exercise. This is a great stress reliever, right? Go out and run a few miles, right? Go get a treadmill, go lift some weights, go do something, get yourself moving. Oftentimes, it can help bring you out of a state of stress or anxiety as you get your body moving and you begin to kind of get some of that energy out in a positive way. And so we have to learn, be present in our emotions, face our emotions, to grapple with them and work through them in healthy ways rather than stuffing them and letting them fester and become all sorts of erratic and bad behavior. But sometimes it's not just a matter of naming your emotions and getting yourself acquainted with yourself and what's going on the inside. Sometimes we just need to take the time to feel. Take the time just to feel what it is that we are going through. But here's what we learn on the journey to emotional health. We learn something that I would call the paradox of emotions. The paradox of emotions. And that's the final thing I want to talk to you about this morning. Oftentimes, in order to feel the best of our emotions and what they have to offer us, we have to go through the most painful and the most difficult of feelings. We have to embrace sadness. We have to embrace anger. We have to embrace disgust. And to be able to come out on the other side with an experience of joy and true joy and contentment. But back to this passage that we looked at earlier in John 16, Jesus says, you will grieve, but your grief will turn to joy. It's a redemptive experience. It's a transformative experience. You will grieve, but your grief will turn to joy. And in order to reach the summit, Jesus is saying, we have to traverse through the valley. We have to move through the valley in order to get to the peaks. In order to get to the summits. And so there's this principle in the Christian faith that recognizes that sadness and grief and anger and all these emotions that we put the label negative on are part of the process. And our faith has this central symbol, and that symbol is the cross. And the cross is a crux, right? It's this center of our faith, right? And it's this very brutal, disorienting death of our Savior Jesus. And as we learn to recognize that is central to our faith, it's a very troubling thing, right? Because it's a very painful loss. It's a very difficult, confusing death. You know, we don't quite understand, you know, why is this necessary? Why did this have to happen? But it is at the center. It is what we celebrate. And when we celebrate things like Resurrection Sunday, one of the things that we always say around Westside is we have to go through Good Friday first. We have to go through that disorienting feeling the disciples must have felt. We have to recognize the pain and the hardship and the difficulties of life before we can see the redemption of resurrection and all that brings. There's a popular way to say it. We say that before Sunday, there was Friday. And maybe we're in the midst of a dark night of the soul. We could say, it's Friday right now, but in hope, Sunday's coming, right? And we speak to those things all the time, especially around the season of Easter. But this movie ends with the character Joy having this epiphany that in order to fix what is wrong with Riley, she needs to work together with sadness. They need to be a team. In fact, all the emotions need to work together. But what they found is that it was okay to be sad in the sad moments. It was okay to have those times of grief and to mourn what it was that you were experiencing. And when they gave sadness her time, when they gave her the ability to really grieve and to mourn over the things that were truly sad, they found through the redemptive process, that true joy would come, that true contentment would come. And so that's the epiphany that they all have together, all these emotional characters inside of Riley's head, that they all belong together. They all work together to create this emotionally healthy human being, Riley, and that when they did work together, they were emotionally healthy. And of course, That's just the truth of what it means to be a human being. We recognize that all of our emotions have to exist together in harmony. And it's amazing how often I've had the experience, and I'm sure that you've had it too. You're with a close group of friends, you're with family, and maybe it's a tragic situation, maybe a death in the family, for instance, and you're grieving together, you're embracing together, you're crying tears of sadness. But there's something that happens through that process that's so beautiful, it's so redemptive, that oftentimes in the midst of that, somebody will say something that is just so true and so apt and so timely that it brings a smile to everyone's faces. And there's something joyful that comes even in the midst of this time of sadness. I was remembering years back, during my grandmother's funeral, my whole family had come together, and it was a particularly difficult time because my grandmother was the matriarch of the family. She was kind of the last person from her generation, right? My grandfather had already died. Many of her siblings had died. And so all the cousins and all the sons and daughters and all the grandchildren were all together for this moment. And it was like saying goodbye, not just to my grandmother, it was like saying goodbye to a whole generation, right? So it was particularly difficult in that moment as people recognized, hey, we're probably going to be more fractured from here on out. You know, there's no kind of central person who's the glue to hold things together. And so it was heavy. It was a heavy moment for us as a family. And everyone was grieving. Everyone was really taking the time to go through that. My grandmother died of Alzheimer's. And so it was kind of a rough transition those last couple of years for any of you who have experienced that. But one of my uncles, who's this big, burly guy, and he's got a big beard. He looks like one of the band members from ZZ Top, if anybody knows that. He drives a Harley, you know, wears his sunglasses inside, you know, the whole thing. And he got up near the end of all of this, and everybody's sharing these stories, and it's heartwarming, and there's a lot of tears, and it's kind of a somber place at this moment. And he got up, and because my grandma had suffered from Alzheimer's, he was explaining about how my grandmother had a particularly noxious, when she passed gas, it was particularly strong, right? And he was sharing this, and everybody was just uncomfortable, like, what are you talking about? He said the great thing about it was when she was struggling with Alzheimer's, she would pass gas, and then she would forget that it was her, you know? And it was this real innocent, you know, story that he was telling, and everybody just erupted in laughter, right? And it just was this shift. It was this moment where everybody just kind of breathed this collective sigh of, okay, it's okay to remember the good times. You know, we're not going to just live in this season of sadness. We're going to remember that her life was a gift. And it was really redemptive, and it was just beautiful. And in his crass, you know, way of just saying something is probably totally inappropriate, and yet everybody just kind of appreciated him, the rough character that he was, and everybody just, it was almost like this giant hug in the room, right? And everybody just turned to this moment of joy and genuine joy. It was a joy that was born out of the sadness of losing this wonderful woman, and yet, you know, we could see her life now as this gift and this beautiful thing that God had given. And there's something that was so redemptive about that moment. And, you know, that's what emotional health really looks like. You know, we navigate the ups and the downs of life, but we don't want to forget that it's because we've gone through the valley, that summit, that peak is so majestic and so beautiful, right? Because we see it in contrast to what could be, right? Because God has brought something beautiful out of something that was dying and decaying. And so we see that and we recognize, wow, God, you're so good. God, you can bring beauty from ashes, right? You can bring life from death, and you do it again and again and again. So no matter how many times I traverse down through that valley, I have hope renewed to know that, God, you're going to rescue. You're going to restore. You're going to bring me to that finish line. And so what I want to say to you in closing is just a final benediction this morning. May you be present in all of your emotions. May you experience the fullness of sadness and anger and disgust and fear, only to come to a complete and a full experience of God's joy. I want to pray for you this morning.